views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of 55KRC, The Talk Station, and Clear Channel Worldwide.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, Cincinnati's only gun talk show. Join us. We're going to explore the topic of firearms and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Now here's your host, John Johnston, on 55KRZ, The Talk Station.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. I'm your host, John Johnston. As always, check us out on ballisticradio.com and facebook.com/ballisticradio. Happy Mother's Day to everyone. I'm actually going to fly solo tonight just because everyone else has a life outside the radio station other than me, I guess. But this will be the last night for a while at least that you're going to have to deal with me all by myself. So I'll try not to say anything too untoward since I don't have anyone to rein me in tonight. Anyway, we're going to be talking with Tom Givens. Tom is an interesting gentleman. He owns Rangemaster down in Memphis, Tennessee. I'm actually planning on going down there for some training, but Tom holds the distinction of having the highest number of students involved in gunfights. I think right now it's at 62, which is a staggering number when you think about that. We're going to be talking with him a little bit about what he teaches and why he teaches it and just some of the lessons and takeaways from having a base of knowledge like that where you can actually, it's not anecdotal evidence. This is, here's what happened, and I can take a look and see what worked and what didn't and all that. But pretty much the point of this show is going to be have your gun with you. And there's no other way to put it, really. A lot of people tell me, you know, they're only going to carry when they think they need it or when they're going to a bad area or whatever myriad reasons they come up with to justify why it is they don't have it on them. And the problem with that is if you need a gun, you're going to need it right now. And if you don't have it, well, the consequences of not having it, well, it might be a mistake you only make once because that's it. It'd be one of those mistakes that lasts the rest of your life. So, you know, I'm one of those people, I actually will carry it home even. I figure if it's good enough to put on in the morning and wear all day to work and out and about running my errands and all that, I don't see why when I get home all of a sudden, oh, it's not comfortable anymore, I'm going to take it off. So generally, some people look at that and they go, well, that seems a little excessive, you know, why do you need it at home? The problem becomes, going back to that really bad day that you're going to be having if you ever need your gun, you don't get to pick and choose when that occurs. Your gunfight could happen at any time, and you're generally not the one that instigates it. At least you shouldn't be. And if you are, well, you've got other problems, which will probably involve a long, long time in jail. But so you don't get to pick when this happens. You know, this isn't like, next Tuesday at 3:45, I'm going to be involved in a struggle for my life, and I'll make sure I have my gun then. And obviously, that's not how it works. And I know it sounds a little silly or maybe patronizing or, you know, John, aren't you being a little hyperbolic there? And, well, yeah, I kind of am, but, you know, this is something, if we get it wrong, we die. I mean, there's no polite way to say that. There's not a nice way to say that. It's pretty simple. If we need it, you know, and don't have it, well, we don't have much of a recourse there. I mean, and you will hear about instances where someone is attacked by someone else and they wrestle a gun away from them or somehow survive through some sort of feat of unarmed combat or strength or whatever have you. But the thing to keep in mind there, folks, that's luck, you know. And okay, I'd rather be lucky than good, I guess, but you can't count on that, and it's just, you know, devastating consequences if we're wrong in the decisions we're making. Now, obviously, there's things that you can do to avoid confrontation, de-escalate confrontation, don't put yourself in situations where you are more likely to need a firearm. And I'm not telling everyone that, you know, I'm not saying to folks, hey, you need to be afraid. You need to live your life in fear. That's not what this is about. This is the same mentality that everyone has when they put a seatbelt on or when they look at a car's crash test ratings and they go, hey, this one does better in frontal impacts and side impacts than this other car. I think I'll buy it for that reason. Anti-lock brakes, whatever. Whatever have you, you know, whatever things that you do in your life that make you, and I'm doing air quotes here, safer. You know, we do those things not because we are afraid they're going to happen. We do those things because we acknowledge that, you know, we don't always have control over the situations that we find ourselves in. We don't always have control for what the next guy, the next lane over is doing. I mean, how many people have been hit by another driver? And I will posit that if you are on a long enough timeline and you are involved in a car accident at some point in your life, I mean, I guess there are some folks that don't have those, but almost everyone I know has been involved in one. Well, yeah, okay, sometimes it's your fault, and a lot of times it's not. I mean, you get rear-ended at a stoplight. Well, what could you do about that? Well, not very much. You know, you get T-boned going through a green light by the guy that is texting or has had too much to drink or whatever. Well, you just have to deal with that. And that's what having the gun is. Now, I realize that not everyone loves firearms. Not everyone wants to, you know, go out and spend all their time, you know, practicing and training for something that statistically is not likely to happen. And that's fine. You don't need to. I mean, I shoot a lot because I enjoy it. It's kind of some guys golf, some guys fish. Well, I like to shoot, and that relaxes me, and I find my zen there. Well, you don't have to be that way. I'm not saying that you need to. You know, you don't even need to like shooting. That's fine, too. And heck, if you don't want to carry a gun, that's fine. But just be cognizant of why you're making the decisions you're making, what the potential consequences are. You know, if you don't have a firearm on you and you need one, what can happen to you? All right. It's not anything positive if you need one. So that's why 99.9% of the time, unless it's somewhere I need to go that I can't carry a gun there for whatever reason, and I can't really think of too many places. I guess court. If I have to go to court, okay, I'm not going to carry. Can't do much about that. I haven't figured out how to convince the sheriffs that, oh, no, I'm cool, I promise. Well, yeah, they frown on that, so whatever. But outside of that, you know, I don't go places I can't carry, and even at home, I carry. It's not a big deal. I don't even notice the gun. I notice when the gun's not there, but when it's there, I don't pay any attention to it. It's like my wallet, you know? If obviously, women aren't going to have as much experience with this, but if you're a dude and you carry a wallet in your back pocket, you notice when it's not there. When it is there, you don't really pay much attention. It's supposed to be there, so you don't notice it. But if it's not, that'll get your attention real fast. That's what the gun is for me. So, and I'm not saying everyone needs to be that way, but it's just something to think about. We're actually going to talk with Tom a little bit about his students' experiences and, you know, what he's found and what the standard gunfight looks like. And I'm sure you're all going to be surprised because, go figure, there isn't a standard one. And, you know, we're just going to talk with him about how he trains the average person to survive and win those gunfights. Anyway, you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Wealthy and wise, the Steve Perrin Coordinated Financial Planning Studios. This is 55 KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. Joining us this evening is Mr. Tom Givens. He's been waiting on the line patiently. I'm going to try and get him on the phone now. Tom, are you there?
Yep. Excellent. Good evening.
Excellent. Thank you. Thanks for joining in, Tom. I really appreciate it. So if you don't mind, could you tell the listeners a little bit about your background and just kind of how you got involved in the whole training thing?
Okay. Well, I've been involved in firearms all of my life, basically. I was on the rifle team in high school and actually had the good fortune of having Jeff Cooper is an early mentor in this business. I was involved with him in setting up IPSC back in the 70s. I was one of the original section coordinators in the Southeast for that. Won a few state and regional championship titles in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, I was involved in setting up IDPA. My IDPA member number is A0008.
That's kind of impressive.
Yeah, it gives you an idea how early I got involved in that. Won a couple of state and regional championship titles in that game. So I've been around competitive shooting pretty much all my life. Did 25 years in law enforcement and related work here in one of the most violent metropolitan areas in the U.S. So had a chance to see a bit of violence firsthand, see what it does to people.
Yeah.
Been through a great deal of training over the years by all the institutional schools, and had good fortune to train with an awful lot of the private sector trainers over the years. One of the things, I've owned a range for 17 years, so one of the things I do is bring in outside trainers several times a year to see what they're doing and see how they train people and take any good tidbits from their programs and work them into ours. So got a pretty broad background.
Yeah, I was actually really sad I missed a tactical conference this year. Maybe next year. Who knows?
Yeah, that's the single best deal in the training business, actually. That'll be next February again.
Yeah, I was busy getting my teeth ripped out on my 30th birthday, so oh well. Anyway, so tell me a little bit about Rangemaster, I guess. I mean, you've kind of covered it a little bit, but Range in Memphis, and you guys seem to concentrate a lot more on bringing quality training in than some of the ranges I'm familiar with.
We look at the range as a training school that lets the public use the range when we're not using it. And most ranges are the opposite. It's a commercial range that occasionally brings in training. So we're kind of the opposite of the mainstream. We teach some kind of class at least 5 or 6 days out of every week.
Mm-hmm.
There are about 4 or 5 major holidays during the year that we don't teach some kind of class on. But other than those, every weekend and most nights during the week, we're teaching some kind of class. A bunch of different levels. We do like over 20 different classes, actually.
Right.
But the bulk of them are basic handgun training classes.
Right. And that's kind of, I'll kind of get into that a little bit later. But so a lot of folks are aware of Rangemaster because of an interesting little tidbit. And you've had 62 students involved in shootings?
Yeah, that I know of. That's the ones that have reported back to us.
Okay. We'll get into that a little bit. What's the current win-loss numbers there, if you don't mind getting into it?
Well, actually, it's 60 wins, 0 losses, and 2 forfeits.
Right. And get into why you're saying a forfeit there just for...
Well, the only 2 people that didn't win their fight showed up at it without a gun.
Mm.
And subsequently, they died. Both were murdered during street robberies, separate incidents. And in both cases, they were essentially executed for the contents of their pockets.
Right.
Those 2 guys got out of bed that day and said, "I'm not going to need a gun today," so they didn't wear one. They were wrong, and they paid with their lives. Of the 60 that were simply armed on the day the incident happened, they all won. 3 were injured to any degree at all. The other 50-plus weren't even injured. And everybody that had enough sense to bring a gun to the fight won it. So I don't know about you, but I see a clue embedded there.
Yeah. Well, I tend to try and impress upon people the importance of having a firearm if you need one, but not everyone listens to me for some reason.
That's one of the things that we really beat on students about. I think that's really the key to the success ratio is that if you can convince people that it's the simple need to actually have the gun on their person, then the first and biggest hurdle when the fight starts has already been overcome.
Right, and that's kind of an interesting thing. I mean, obviously... So you've got 60 people involved in gunfights that you're aware of that have won, 2 that unfortunately were murdered. Just out of curiosity, the details on those, was that something where they were executed and then their pockets got rifled, or was it, "Hey, give me your stuff," and then they decided to shoot them after the fact?
Yeah, don't really know. There were not eyewitnesses to either case, so
yeah.
I can't tell you the sequence of events. I can just tell you that they were killed during robberies on parking lots, and neither one of them was armed at the time.
That's a shame. Definitely a shame. So just to be clear, the other 60, these aren't, combat vets fresh back from the wars or anything
No.
like that. This is a wide range of people. Most of them, or a lot of them, not even shooters to begin with, or
a lot of them are not what we would call gun people. They're just people that recognize a need. Quite often, they're prior violent crime victims.
Right.
Unfortunately, to a lot of people, violent crime is imaginary until it happens to someone they actually know, they're actually related to, or to them personally. And all of a sudden, it becomes real. They're what I call motivated students.
Yeah.
And we get a fair number of those. You know, we had a female, for instance, that works overnight in a convenience store, what we call a stop and rob around here.
Yeah.
And
we call them that around here, too.
Okay. But she was held up a couple of times, and guy threatened to kill her the second time she was held up, so she decided that she was pushing her luck to let that continue.
Yeah.
Came in, took some training, and just a few weeks later, a guy came in, tried to stick him up again, and this time she wound up sidestepping and punching a hole in the guy's chest.
Yeah,
he decided he didn't really want to rob the place.
Well, that'll do it.
But that's a typical experience. Someone who has had the experience before, lived through it, decided, I don't really want to trust the luck to survive this again.
Yeah, it seems like that. I hear a lot of talk of, well, you know, if you just give them what they want, chances are they'll leave you alone and all that. But it's
chances are. Unfortunately, if you wait to see if he's going to kill you, it's too late to stop him from killing you.
Yeah, it's kind of like, well, if you're wrong, okay.
Yeah.
Last mistake you make, I guess. Which,
yeah. You know, if somebody points a gun at you and says, give me whatever, the rest of the implied sentence is, or I will kill you.
Right.
And that's a fairly serious issue.
But, yeah, I think it bothered me just a little bit most days. So you and obviously I know a little bit more about the training that you guys offer than the average listener, but something that I've always kind of found interesting, you're a big advocate of eye-level presentation of a firearm, sighted shooting.
Absolutely.
Sidestep on the draw, which is interesting. Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, not all fights, but what I would call the typical fight.
Mm-hmm.
Occurs inside the length of a car, maybe two or three steps, maybe four or five steps, but the vast majority, in fact, over 9 out of 10, the ones that we've tracked with our students have been in that 3 to 5 yard range, which I typically just call a car length. Typical American car, 16 feet long, so talking about 5 yards. At that kind of distance, the other guy has been thinking about robbing you. He's probably been watching you. He's probably made an approach to you, so he's had a bit of time to get amped up.
Mm-hmm.
His heart rate, blood pressure have gone up, and his vision is probably narrowed. So by simply sidestepping, you're getting out from in front of the guy's muzzle, but you're also creating a bit of confusion at
right.
that kind of distance. Beyond that distance, it doesn't seem to help much because his foveal cone is big enough that he can see what direction you're moving in. But at very close range, you basically just step right out of the guy's view.
That's interesting.
And creates a little confusion. Basically, what you're doing is trying to buy the time to deploy your gun by stepping out of his vision. The one I mentioned a minute ago with the females actually caught on surveillance camera, with one looking directly over her shoulder at the bad guy and one shooting lengthwise up the counter camera, looking
right.
lengthwise up the counter. So we got a really good full-color, real-time view of the fight. And when you see her take a sidestep to the left, you can see on the guy's face what? Pretty evident that it screwed up his OODA cycle. When you think about it, you know, what does his life experience, his training, which he gets in jail, and his life experience, which he gets on the street, what do those things tell him to expect when he points a gun at somebody in a robbery?
Right.
They're going to whine, whimper, and do whatever he says. The last thing they expect is for you to do something physical outside his plan. So when she simply sidestepped, you can see it written on his face, what's going on here. And then by the time he reacquires her in his vision, she's pointing a gun at his chest.
Well,
and by the way, she went to two hands and eye level right there on camera. So,
well, there you go.
Don't tell me we can't teach people to do that.
Well, you revert back to your training is what I was always taught. Now, just I know a lot of the folks that listen to the show are newer to the gun thing, and I know what the OODA loop is, but can you explain it for the listeners?
Yeah, hopefully they'd be curious enough to Google it up. It's Colonel John Boyd's OODA cycle, OODA.
Mm-hmm.
It stands for Observe, Orient, Decide, Act, which is basically the sequence of events that a human goes through before he takes some physical action.
Right.
When the hold-up man sticks a gun in your face and says, give it up, he's at act. When you disappear from his view, you bump him back down to observe. Where did he go? Then he finds you again, he's got to orient to you. Then only then could he decide what to do, and only then could he act. If we can bump the guy down twice, we create enough delay that he'll never get back up to act. The first one, when you disappear from his view, and then the second one, when he reorients to you, but now you've got a gun pointed at him. That's another little shock to his system.
Right.
Basically, what we've done there is buy enough time to get the gun out and do something with it.
Well, and that's
just stand in front of the guy. If you just stand in front of the guy and go for your gun, he's going to be shocked that you came out with a gun instead of a wallet, but he'll get over it about the same time you fire, and your bullets will pass each other in mid-flight, and you both get hit.
Well, yeah.
That's a tie. I'm not much interested in ties.
No, winning sounds better to me. We got about a minute and a half left before the next commercial break, but just I guess the best example I've ever had of the OODA loop, just as far as an everyday setting, is if you're out on the street and you hear a car backfire, generally the first thing you do is turn that direction, figure out what it is, and decide, oh, okay, no big deal, and then go back to whatever you're doing. I mean, basic example in everyday life.
Yeah, you spike upward a little bit. Same thing would apply to Colonel Cooper's color codes are actually very closely tied to the OODA cycle. You're out in the real world, you'd be in yellow, you hear the backfire, you go up to orange, you turn around and see that it's a backfire, it's not an armed person, and you go right back down to yellow. You had a spike, whether you're talking about the OODA cycle or the color code, you had a spike, but you came right back down to where you were and went on about your business when you saw there wasn't anything to it.
Yeah, and that seems to be a very big part of why, I mean, like you said, other than the two that didn't have the guns with them, you've only had three students injured in their fights?
Yeah, one of them was struck in the head with a sap. That was the signal that the fight's begun. One actually was going toward a doorway in the hall as the bad guy was coming up the hall. Neither one knew it, and they almost ran into each other in the doorway. Slapped the bad guy's gun down where he got shot through the top of the foot and put three rounds in the burglar's chest. So that's I don't consider that one a tie.
Yeah.
And the other one was an actual exchange of shots where our guy got hit three times and the bad guy got hit, but he didn't move out from in front of the guy, and they were only about 6 feet apart.
Yeah.
So it's not too hard to get hit if you stay in front of the guy's muzzle at that distance, which is a lot of what the sidestep's about.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that a little bit more and just some of the other things that that you kind of teach folks to help them get through any sort of violent encounters. Right now, everyone's listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Hi, it's Brian Thomas, Monday in the Morning Show. You know Dad's blood pressure's up over something. We'll find out together what it is. Make sure you're at 705 KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. For folks just tuning in, we are talking to Mr. Tom Givens of Rangemaster Memphis. If you guys want, you can call us at 749-5500, or if you're out of the area, 1-800-823-8255. I'm going to try and get your calls at the end of the show, if I'm able to. Right now, don't have anyone holding on the line, so if you've got a gun question, I might actually get to answer it for you. Anyway, let's get back to Tom. Tom, are you still there?
Yep.
Excellent. I haven't hung up on you yet. I had that problem with Todd when he called in. I'm learning. So anyway, we were talking about the OODA loop and why that's important and kind of why you teach the sidestep. Now, another thing I've noticed that's interesting that you guys do, a lot of instructors, a lot of the tactical instructors, and I'll use that term loosely, but a lot of them will say things like, well, inside of a certain distance, you're not going to use your sights, or inside of a certain distance, you're only going to have one hand on the gun. Now, I've always thought that unless you're shooting from retention, that strikes me as bad, but you've got a lot more experience than I do. What are your thoughts on that?
You've already basically hit it on the head, that we shoot with one hand if we only have one hand. If you've got both hands, put them on the gun.
Right.
It's stupid to shoot with one hand if you've got them both free, put them both on the gun. It's stupid to shoot from below eye level if you've got room to do that. So if you're in physical contact with an adversary or you're about to be in physical contact with the adversary, then you would shoot from retention. Otherwise, get the thing to eye level in as many hands as you can get on it and deliver accurate hits. Accurate hits quickly are what stop fights, not what technique you're using.
Right.
There's no such thing as an instinctive way to use a handgun any more than there's an instinctive way to drive a car or operate a blender or anything else that you have to be taught how to work.
Right.
So you do what you've been taught how to do. The young lady I mentioned, for instance, right there on camera going to two hands and eye level because it's the only way she'd ever been allowed to use a gun.
Right.
So she reverts to training and does what she's been told to do.
Now, do you think that's a side effect of a lot of people come into shooting before they ever get into the, you know, the mindset of, well, heck, I might have to use this thing for something a little more serious than my Campbell soup cans on the back fence.
Right.
Do you think it's more of that people, when they first learn how to shoot, a lot of times are taught by someone that, you know, is shooting recreationally and just doesn't know any better, and then they don't bother to change? Or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's probably a big piece of it. It's a cultural issue as much as anything else. You watch television and movies, an awful lot of people starting to change a little bit now, but in the past, all shooting was one-handed. Very, very, very rarely did you see a gun brought to eye level in television and movies. So that's how people imprint and you think, well, that must be what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
You know, you got to remember a pretty small percentage of the population's got any real formal training.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems to be just, one, I've kind of hit on this in the past, but a lot of folks get the gun and they think that's it. That's the extent of, hey, I'm cool now. I got it.
That's... Right. It's a magic charm to most of them.
Right.
I'm taking it home, put it in a sock drawer, and nothing bad will happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Yeah. That's kind of faulty reasoning. But one of the reasons that we have so many students involved in that, we have a very high violent crime rate. Tennessee is a shall issue state, but you have to have a certain minimum amount of training before you can even apply for your permit.
Right.
So these people have had some training at least when they do get into something, so they revert back to what they've been trained to do.
Well, and that's now, correct me if I'm wrong, you had, and this kind of goes back to the carrying at home thing, but you guys had one incident where I want to say it's a woman's husband was in her yard and was getting attacked by someone, and she took a shot at him.
Yeah, yeah. Guy has a business that handles a lot of cash, and it's not uncommon around here, probably nowhere else either, but it's not uncommon for people to follow shop owners home from work when they close up for the day on the assumption that they've got a bank bag with them with the day's receipts in it.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's coming home. It's about 10:30 in the evening. Gets out of the car, and as he's crossing his front yard to go to the front door, three men who apparently followed him home from his shop attacked him. In the struggle, one of them shot him in the leg. He wasn't armed, but his wife, a student of ours, was in the house, heard the commotion, opened the second floor bedroom window, and engaged the bad guy. She could clearly see he had a gun on her husband, and engaged him from about 15 yards from the window in the middle of the front yard, and hit him, and caused him to stop shooting her husband and run away. And he was picked up later at the hospital. She identified him, and he was prosecuted.
Well, there you go. And that was something I kind of wanted to cover earlier. Now, you said most of the gunfights that your students have been involved in have occurred at car length distance, 3 to 5 yards. That's not to say, and I already know this, but that's not to say you don't advocate being able to shoot at a longer range with a handgun.
No, absolutely not. We've had three students just in the last few years have to engage at 15, 17, and 22 yards. And in every case, it was absolutely legitimate and absolutely necessary to shoot. And the last one being a perfect example. If she hadn't shot her husband, would have been shot again, and there's no reason to assume he's going to survive being shot over and over again. So when you shoot to save somebody else, you may well be shooting at a longer distance when you don't have time to walk over there to do something about it. You've got to do something about it from where you are.
And a miss in that situation could be kind of bad, it sounds like.
Had she shot her husband, it probably wouldn't have improved matters too much.
No, probably not. Yeah, so you could make a joke, but that'd be inappropriate. Anyway, this is why I like having a co-host, is because they keep me from making those jokes.
Right.
So I kind of have to watch myself tonight. Anyway, so just kind of going back to it, it's not, you don't like focus on one skill set and here's what you need to do just because this is usually what happens. You want to be prepared for the whitest.
Yeah, we look at, actually, I have a 2-hour PowerPoint lecture on this where we get into how we came up with what we teach and what we teach and how we teach. But the typical, I like to get away from the word average. It's an average gunfight doesn't mean a thing. To have averages, you've got to have numbers bigger and numbers smaller. You kind of mash them together and come up with a number that's not representative of any of them. If you look at the average number of shots fired in 10 fights of ours that I looked at in some detail for a video presentation, the average number of shots fired was 3.8. But nobody fired 3.8 shots.
Right.
So I would rather get to typical. Typical is a better descriptor than average. And a typical would be the things that you see cropping up over and over and over again consistently. typically, we're talking about around a car length. Again, there are exceptions to that. 3 out of 60 is a, you know, not a real large percentage, like 4 or 5%. But they do occur. You need to be prepared for them. But the majority, over 90%, going to be inside the length of a car. You're going to have to be able to access the weapon quickly. There's going to be a fairly limited amount of time in that kind of space.
Yeah.
You need to get hits with the first rounds, the first few rounds. We know pretty much one shot's almost never going to fix it, so we have to talk in terms of multiple rapid, accurate shots. So what we try to do is prune the decision-making tree down to the point where we can move quickly enough to do things inside that short-range envelope and fairly short, pretty compressed time frame. The fight I mentioned in the store, the reason I keep going back to that one is because it's documented on tape. It's easy to say things that are factual about it because it's right there and you can look at it.
Well, yeah, not only that, she was a new shooter too, so.
Yeah, the entire fight from the time the guy comes in the store, gets shot, and goes back out is 3.5 seconds.
Huh.
And that's a typical fight, unfortunately. It happens pretty quickly. So you're going to have a fairly small amount of time to get things done in. So what we would really like a student to be able to do is, number one, access their weapon immediately. Get reliable hits with the first few shots, be able to move off the line while getting the gun out if necessary to either move to cover or just to get out from in front of the guy's muzzle. And then the secondary things are, if the gun malfunctions, be able to fix it. If it runs out, be able to reload it, being able to shoot it with one hand if that's a necessity for whatever reason.
Right.
And then everything beyond that is pretty much frills and window dressing. We get into more esoteric techniques than that. I think you're, to a large degree, for most people, probably wasting valuable training time you could have been ingraining the basics deeper with. Basics executed well and quickly are what win fights.
Excellent. Now, I know I had originally said that I wanted to have you on for 2 seconds, but we're coming up on a commercial break, and I have another couple questions to ask you. Is it all right? Do you mind staying on for?
No, I'd be happy to.
Excellent. I appreciate that. When I get back, I'm going to be talking with Tom a little bit more about just some of the other things he's observed with his students' experiences. Also, if you want to give us a call, no one on the line right now, 749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255. You're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Glenn Beck.
This will blow your mind.
Tomorrow at 9:06 on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. We are still talking to Mr. Tom Givens of Rangemaster down in Memphis. Tom, are you still there?
I'm here.
Hey, I must have finally figured out how these phones work. So anyway, I had during the break one guy calling, and he didn't want to stay on the line, but he was curious. Are there any books or DVD sources or anything like that? Now, you guys have actually condensed some of this onto DVD, haven't you?
At the NTI, the National Tactical Invitational, a few years ago, the people that run that asked me to do a presentation on our students, and I didn't want, at the time I think we'd had 54 or so shootings. I didn't want to try to go through all of them, so we picked out 10 that were a good, strong representative cross-section, pretty much covered all of the things that various students had been involved in. I did a presentation on that, and some people liked it enough to put it on a professional DVD with the Personal Defense Network, and it's called Lessons from the Street. You can get that from our order it through Rangemaster, or you can get it through the Personal Defense Network, either one. It's a detailed debrief on 10 of the shootings involving students.
Okay. Rangemaster.com, correct?
Yeah, they're just call the shop, and they'll get one to them. Yeah, I'd like to touch on something that people always ask me about the hardware issues. I don't care. I just couldn't care less. If you have a reasonably, there's a minimum, of course, but if you have a reasonable pistol, 9mm bigger, holds 10 or more rounds, I don't care how you carry it, if you can access it quickly and reliably, if you can get good hits with it quickly and reliably, that pretty much takes care of the hardware side of it. It's the software side where people fall down.
Right.
I've had psychologist went through a number of our classes, came to me one day during a break and said, I figured out why your students win so often. I said, why is that? He said, because you give them permission to defend themselves. They've had a lifetime of indoctrination as victims.
Right.
And when you approach this, as we do on the mental side, it wakes them up a little bit and lets them understand, I do have the right to defend myself. I do have the right to live without being crippled or raped or murdered. But nobody's going to enforce that but me. I have to take care of myself. And I think that's the first step in this. You have to change the way you think about this entirely. When I was an investigator, I talked to an awful lot of violent crime victims, and one of the things you hear from them over and over and over again, if you ask them what was going through your mind when you realized you were under serious attack, was, I can't believe this is happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
And you lock up in that denial loop and can't really do anything. So we try to ensure that our students understand what the actual threat level is, so that when it does occur, instead of, I can't believe this is happening to me, the mindset is more of, well, it's my time at bat. I need to handle this.
Right.
And that's a huge difference.
That's actually been something that I've kind of been, it's funny, everyone I talk to that's actually had actual personal involvement in gunfights, either from behind the gun side or from the looking at them after the fact side, it seems to boil down to recognizing when it's time for violence to occur on your part and making that decision quick enough and reacting violently enough.
Right, being able to actually do something physical instead of just standing there with your mouth open saying, I can't believe this is happening.
Yeah.
Part of the problem, I believe, is, I'm generalizing here about people in general,
mm-hmm.
but I think an awful lot of people are what I call willfully ignorant. They don't know what the actual threat level is, and they don't want to know what the actual threat level is, because then they'd be required to do something or make a decision.
Yeah.
So they just make an effort not to know. The Bureau of Justice Statistics is a little federal outfit that doesn't do anything. Their sole job is to collect crime data about crime in the United States and then publish numbers on them every year. According to them, last year in the U.S., there were 5.8 million violent crimes, and they only count four crimes as violent crimes: murder, aggravated assault, forcible rape, and robbery.
Mm-hmm.
5.8 million of those. Well, if you do the math, there's only 310 million people in the country. That's one of those four violent, life-changing, life-threatening crimes for every 54 people. But if you take out the children, that's one for every 30 people.
Mm-hmm.
So when people say to me, I know the odds of my needing my gun are one in a million, I just laugh at them. No, they're actually more like one in two and a half dozen.
Yeah.
Every one of those 5.8 million violent crimes last year was an opportunity for someone to defend themselves with a handgun. They just didn't have one.
Yeah, I actually got in a discussion online with a guy I know. It wasn't much of a discussion, but it was just an observation that he was surprised at the number of students that you guys have had, and he's like, well, it's real easy to wander into a bad neighborhood down in Memphis. And someone else pointed out, well, the bad neighborhoods can come to you sometimes, A.
Yeah, most of these were not in bad neighborhoods.
Yeah.
They're in, in fact, of the 10 that we looked at for the presentation, three of them are shopping mall parking lots.
To go figure. And, yeah. And the other thing that I pointed out was it is, you know, we're relatively in Ohio new to concealed carry. It's been since 2004. So as we become, as we have larger numbers of people that are carrying, we're probably likely to see greater numbers of defensive gun uses.
Sure.
Now, I actually had a couple questions off of Todd Green's forum, just members
okay.
there, and since it's Mother's Day and we're not getting too many callers, I figured I'd try and hit those real quick. One of them was, were there any conclusions? As you started looking at everything that was going on as far as your students, was there anything that was occurring that you found surprising, or, you know, what were your thoughts as, like, you got into this? Was the conventional wrong?
Not really. As I said, I've been a full-time trainer for a number of years, but I was involved in investigating crime for many years before that, and none of this is really a surprise to me. I'm not surprised that it usually takes several shots to make somebody stop what they're doing. Very little of this is what I would call a surprise or a shock to me.
Yeah. Just after having been involved in them.
Yeah, you see the same things over and over and over and over again in criminal victimization. If the victim just happens to have a gun, it doesn't change the dynamics that led to that point.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you see being taught, I guess, by, and obviously I don't want you to call anyone out on my show. Please don't. Not that I think you would.
But a real flame war with that.
Oh, God. I haven't been too explosive yet, and I don't want to start now. Is there anything that you see other people doing, generalities-wise?
There are. Tactical reloads, a pet peeve of mine, totally out of context in civil self-defense context. It's the most complicated dance we expect somebody to be able to do, but we expect them to do it right after they shot somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But they're the most adrenalized and shaky they're ever going to be in their entire life. And there's no purpose to it. It's a military reload. It's maintaining your magazines because you're going to be in battle over an extended period of time, And when the supply people bring you ammo, it won't do you any good without the magazines to put it in. That's a context that has nothing to do with civil self-defense. So I don't waste training time on that. It's a very labor-intensive learning curve to get to where you can do a tactical reload smoothly, and to what end? You're never going to use it in the real world.
And just to explain, tactical reload would be where you retain your magazine that's just come out of the gun.
You get a magazine up to the gun, take the partial one out, put the full one in, and put the partial one back somewhere on your person to save it. What I would much rather a civilian do is get a new magazine up to the gun, get the old one out, get the new one in, get your hands back on the gun as quickly as possible, and not worry about the few rounds in that magazine you dropped.
A
couple of trainers have had a reward of $10,000 out for, I think, over 10 years now. I'm almost certain of that. For anybody that could find somebody that actually used the rounds retained in that partial magazine in a U.S. civilian self-defense shooting. And, of course, they've never found anybody do that.
Right.
It's not going to happen. And so that's a prime example of something people waste a god-awful lot of training time on for no return.
Well, I mean, I guess people need to have something to hang their shingle on and all that.
Yeah.
So, hey, to each their own. I am a fan of people just getting out and learning to shoot and learning to shoot well. So,
yeah.
I mean, I don't want anybody to think that I'm down on people just because they teach a different way.
No, you pays your money and you take your chances. But I would really like to see people put more effort into the things that are actually going to happen.
Yeah.
If you have to use your gun in self-defense, okay, first thing I can guarantee you're going to have to do is get it out. So the presentation is a critical skill. A lot of people don't put enough effort into that. We get people up to a pretty tight time limits in our advanced training, and to do that, you got to clean your presentation up. Somebody you mentioned Ty Green's forum. Somebody on there's got a SIG line that says there's no timer in a gunfight. However, the other guy's trying to kill you, and he might be in a hurry.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And I think there's an awful lot of truth to that. If you really need your gun out, you need it out right now.
That's it. And it seems like we got about a minute left before the show's over. The time sure goes quick. But it seems like a lot of folks concentrate on getting their split times down, but you know, by hundreds of a second. By split time, for folks that don't know, I'm talking about time in between shots. And it's kind of like you said, a lot of that time can be better spent on getting your gun out and then working your reload, would you say?
Yeah, and just guaranteeing reliable, fast hits.
Yeah.
It's not going to do you any good at all to shoot at somebody. Typically, if you guys have been shot at plenty of times before, shooting them is a lot more productive than shooting at them. So.
Yeah. Well, hey, Tom.
Good accurate first round hits.
Yeah. Hey, it's that time. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Been a pleasure.
Thank you very much. Next week, we're going to be talking to Dave Spaulding of Handgun Combatives. Dave was the 2010 Law Enforcement Trainer of the Year. You probably read some of his articles if you're into the gun magazines. Anyway, join us next week, 7 p.m. right here on 55KRC. Make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com, and facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks, everyone. Be safe.